Welcome to the Michael U Podcast. We have a very special guest today, Mary Tess Panetta. Mary Tess, thank you for coming on the show.
Mary Tess Kleem, I'm Mary.
Oh, that was a force of habit. Actually, Mary Tess is a very, very old friend of mine. And she was formerly Mary Tess Panetta, but now you're Mrs. Kleem.
Now I'm old maid.
Yeah. Well, Mary Tess, I'd love to hear. Just maybe you can start by telling us a little bit about yourself and how you got started in real estate.
All right. Okay. So I grew up in Richmond, which is where Michael and I know each other from our OG days in McDonald Realty. And so I started when I was 19 years old. I applied for my real estate license and then got licensed at 20.
Wow.
And took off. Not really. It's kind of
like
a slow, dramatic story.
Oh, yeah?
But my career just kind of has gradually grown, and now I'm in it for 14, almost 15 years.
I know. It's like crazy to think, right? That we're like, now we're old vets.
That's weird.
Yeah. We're seasoned, scarred veterans. Yeah. So Mary Tess and I started in Richmond together at McDonald Realty back in 2000. You started just before me, right? Yeah, you started in 2000. I started in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go back to those days.
Oh,
yeah. So Mary Tess, the 2005 edition. So you got started very, very young.
Yes,
that must have been. How was that?
Well, I didn't really know what I was doing. I was recording music at the time,
okay.
And my mom was flipping properties, buying and selling real estate, and she's like, "Mary Tess, you're way smarter than these realtors that I'm working with. You should do this." I was like, okay. You know, as the good, like, Asian child, I was like, yes, mommy, I'll take my license. So, yeah, I got into it right away. That was the peak of the seller's market in 2005.
Right.
So I got a lot of experience right away. So I was very fortunate to get my feet wet very fast.
So how did you get most of your, like, how did your business start? Did you have a big plan? Like, did you
nope.
just...
Don't do what I did, kids.
Right.
I did kind of what they tell you to do. I hosted open houses. I asked my mom for her friends to
right.
help me. And we bought and sold and flipped a couple properties ourselves, mother, daughter together.
Okay.
So I got a little bit of experience that way. And then, yeah, just gradually got to know more and more people.
You know, it's pretty astounding because I think you might be the youngest person that I know that got started in real estate, like being 19 or 20. Like I've met like hundreds of new agents, and you're the only one that's actually
Whoa.
Came as a teenager. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah. I think my license came through when I was 20, but yeah, I applied for when I was 19.
Man.
So I was a baby.
Yeah.
I put on a pantsuit and pretended like I was an adult.
How did you get people to trust you? Like, you know, with that, like being so young. Like that's really young. Like
that's
I started when I was 23 and I thought I was young, but you're like,
I worked with a lot of first time home buyers. So
okay.
I didn't know a little bit more than they did,
right.
but not a lot. like I said, I kind of pretended the whole, you don't fake it till you make it. So
yeah.
I wore my pantsuit. Like I own that.
Yeah.
You know? I drove my mom's car, which is a nice like Mercedes Benz.
Right.
Kind of, yeah. Fake it till I make it
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. And I don't know.
That's, you know what, it's like, it's, so Mary Tess is what we call like a career agent. She basically started from a very young age. Most agents actually transition, right? So they
Correct.
Transition from like another career.
Mm-hmm.
But you've been working since you were very young though, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
I started in the acting field when I was about 8.
Okay.
So I started doing commercials. And then I did a couple little episodes on some TV shows, just like very small minor roles. But I learned at a very young age about work ethic and, you know, auditioning for roles and skipping school all the time for auditions. And then I got into music and recorded music and performing. And so it felt like I had another career prior to.
Yeah. Because since 8 years old, did you want to do that yourself or did your parents force you to do that?
I was a bit of a ham. I mean, I traditionally
okay.
grew up in a Filipino home where karaoke was the thing.
Yeah.
So I was very confident as a child. You know, we have these big parties and they're like, okay, Mary's just going to sing. And then there'd be people in the kitchen. I'm like, they're still talking over there. You know, like I was very much in control of the
right.
crowd at a young age. So I've always liked kind of being in front of crowds and stuff like that.
Yeah. So that was just like natural. It was genetic. It wasn't like...
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
I'm a bit of a ham. I'm youngest of three kids.
Right.
So, you know, always trying to get the attention. And
yeah.
and then trying to get paid for it as you got
right.
older.
That's so funny. So, I'm sure that background helped a little bit when it was kind of coming out of it. So why did you make the change? Like,
You don't make any money.
Right.
So I did make a little bit of money doing acting, because that was a pretty decent career for a child. And then recording music, that was more out of passion, but I didn't write my own songs that got released.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't really make any money doing that. And
right.
So my mom was saying, you know, you should do this as a backup career and just at least, you know, get a license so you can do this on the side to support your music. And,
right.
But then I ended up liking it more than
yeah.
music. And I started seeing checks and I was like, oh, I can actually make money doing this.
Yeah.
So then that kind of took over my career.
So what kind of, what were you in? Like, if we were to IMDb you,
what
would you be in?
Yeah, that's kind of weird that I am on IMDb.
Oh, you are?
I am.
Just made that up.
It's really small, like little tiny, you know, just four or five lines.
Mm-hmm.
I guess my claim to fame would be a small role I had in Josie and the Pussycats. It's a movie that was out.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So.
I love that movie. I'm not kidding. I have like a secret like love of those teeny bopper movies from
yeah.
like the 90s and
yeah.
stuff, like She's All Bad and like
yeah, that was right
American
during that
Pie
time.
And all that other stuff. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I like, and I thought that movie was actually pretty decent.
Right?
Yeah, I thought it was a good movie.
Yeah.
What part did you have in it?
I was just in the first 5 minutes. I was one of the fans and I had to scream that I just wanted to touch them or something really weird like that. But I remember when I went and saw it in the theaters, my face, like it's a close-up of my face
oh, okay.
on the entire
yeah.
screen. I was like, wow, that's my whole face.
Right.
So that was kind of weird.
That's so funny. Did you have any aspirations? Did you want to like pursue
no.
it, do you think?
So as a child, it was pretty easy because really you just had to, you know, be cute and be like, oh, I won the game, or like, it was very easy. And then
right.
as I got older, I actually realized I had to know how to act, not
yeah.
just kind of play pretend. And so it came to a point where I was going to have to either get more serious about it and invest in lessons or not. And so then I chose not to, because
mm-hmm.
I just didn't really have a true passion for it.
Yeah. You don't have any regrets about that.
No,
no?
I think it's an awesome thing that I can show my kids.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of cool to show my kids that, hey, mommy was on TV, you know, but that's kind of as far as
yeah.
that goes.
Yeah, so you never had, did you have any problems with like public speaking or any kind of like public engagement? Because that's like a huge fear for tons of people.
Yeah, well, when I was performing and doing music, there's always that nerves right before you get on stage.
Mm-hmm.
But then once you're there in the spotlight, you can't really see the crowd.
Yeah.
So you could just pretend you're by yourself.
And something like because we've been doing some like things for Oakland and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, once a camera gets there, it's like totally different.
Yeah.
It's just like
okay. So I just filmed my first stats update as a realtor. Oh,
okay. Yeah.
I've never done it before. And yeah, same thing. I wrote down my script. I memorized it. As soon as the camera turned on, I became a robot with no personality.
Exactly,
and I
yeah.
just started reading numbers.
Right.
And then I watched it back. I'm like, this is terrible.
Yeah.
Why do people do
right.
this? So I'm kind of rethinking how I want to do video as a realtor.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty interesting topic because video is so powerful now.
Yes.
And like, you know, Mary Cass and I we just had dim sum. So,
so full.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, I feel my gallstones. So, yeah, so. yeah, so, like, you know, video is such a powerful thing. I'm reading this really, you know, I can't get into it, and I'm pretty good about, you know, trying to get something out of every book, but
mm-hmm.
it's this book by Gary Vaynerchuk. It's called Crush It, and it talks about like video and like
mm-hmm.
being out there and like doing that kind of stuff. Like, what are your thoughts there?
I think people just have to be themselves. I think when I was reading those stats, I was trying to be this very informative, content-driven realtor that's, you know, I'm all about teaching people about real estate, and that's not really genuine to who I am.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a part of what I do when I meet with clients one-on-one. But who I am as a person has nothing to do with stats. And so I find that if you are just naturally talking about something you're passionate about, then it's natural, it's comfortable, it's,
yeah.
it looks congruent to who you are.
Totally. You know, it's important to, even if you're conveying like statistics, for example, but do it in what you would like
yes.
almost, right? Like how
yeah.
you would like to see them versus like, because that's when it's going to read the, I feel like that's when it's going to read the best, right?
Right.
But just talking about your trajectory and getting started in real estate,
mm-hmm.
like, so obviously got started in 2005 as a very, very young person.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, how did it go? Did you do well? Like what's the
trajectory? Okay, so 2005, 2006 were both pretty good real estate years in general. So I did well those years. And then when 2008 hit, I didn't do so well like everybody else.
Yeah.
My income kind of followed everybody else. And those are those years where you're like, is it even worth it to do real estate? Because
right.
the expenses are so high. So I did not do very well during those years. But when I made a move, this is going to sound weird, from Richmond to Abbotsford, that's when my career really took off.
Hmm. Okay. So when did that happen?
So I met a boy. We got married in 2011,
mm-hmm.
and he got a job as a pastor at a church in Abbotsford.
Right.
And I remember when we went on our first date, he was like, just so you know, I'm a pastor, so that means God could call me anywhere.
Right.
And he's like, even like Abbotsford. And I
oh,
remember,
he said
he
Abbotsford.
Said,
okay.
As an that was the one example he gave me. And I went, psh, I'm not moving to Abbotsford. Like so confidently. So foot in mouth now, like, you know, a couple years later, here we are moving
yeah.
to Abbotsford. And at the time, Abbotsford home prices were about $300,000 and Vancouver-ish was like $600,000 or Richmond-ish, right?
Right.
So they're basically half. And I didn't know a single person in Abbotsford, zero people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, okay, this is a test of my faith, first of all, that we're going to move. Tyson's been called there. This is part of my role as a wife, is we, you
right.
know, we prayerfully made the decision to go together. And I was prepared that I was going to lose my career. It's going to be career suicide. Like, you don't go to somewhere where you don't know anybody.
Yeah.
And home prices are half the price. But that year, my income doubled.
Wow.
Crazy.
Yeah, so because you grew up in Richmond, you knew,
yes,
like,
I had a big
you had a huge network and
yeah.
you were born and raised there,
mm-hmm.
and then moving to Abbotsford. So what was the change? Like, what did you do differently?
First of all, like, a big part of the success that came, I have to credit to God, because I think that was a big part of my spiritual journey, was following a call and following and being obedient and going where God calls us. So that was the overall story of my
right.
career. Now, what did I do differently? That's even makes that more true, because I didn't really do a lot differently.
Okay.
It's not like I started online advertising. I didn't, you know, do a bunch of open houses. I
yeah.
didn't start calling people. I did a little bit of training with the owner of Remax at that time.
Right.
And he was Ray, and he gave me a lot of self-confidence in myself. And so I would say that was probably the biggest change, was just a mental shift of believing I could do this, and that I had good value. And he did different training courses with me. And so I felt like I was a better agent, and I had more confidence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it sometimes, you know, some people come out of the gate and they're just like red hot, and they do super well and they continue to do well for a long time. And, you know, and others have different journeys, you know, and like, so obviously, you know, in those down years, you know, from 2008 to 2010, like what kept you going? Like, what kept you like doing what you were doing?
I didn't really have anything else to do. What was I going to do? I didn't, you know, I finished high school. I was taking a few random classes in marketing.
Right.
I genuinely liked working real estate and working with people doing the job.
Mm-hmm.
So I enjoyed it. I was still living at home at the time.
Yeah.
So I didn't have a lot of life expenses in that way.
Yeah, that's such a huge help.
That
though.
Was,
yeah.
Yeah, I owe my mom a lot.
Yeah. That's, you know, because I have the same, like, you know, if when I first got started, it was, you know, it's an expensive business to get started in. You know, you got to buy cars and signs, and especially if you have, like, no money or a little bit of debt, you're pretty screwed. And then just, like, you know, trying to convince people as, like, a early 20-something, or even
right.
in your case, like,
yeah.
almost a teenage, just out of your teenage
yeah.
years to sell property. It takes some time, you know? Like,
mm-hmm.
you got to beg for a while.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
yeah, so it's, like, it's really challenging. I know if I, like, went out and like rented a place or did something like that, it would have been like really, really
yeah,
tough to keep
scary.
Going. Because how long did it take you to make your first sale?
Right away.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I did right away. First day I joined the office, or I went into the manager's office. I'm like, I've got a live one.
He's oh,
like,
really? Wow.
I remember he's like, you're coming out of the gate hot or something. He made some comment like that. So I got started right away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I know is not always the case.
No. For me, it took 6 months to make my first sale. And I remember being
That's normal.
Yeah. I remember being so jealous of you and Sterling and Ray Estrella. So Mary Tess and I cut our teeth together. You know,
mm-hmm.
she's a very near and dear friend of mine. We've been through a lot of, work and life stuff, and I think we've kind of been witness to each other's journey, professionally and personally. I remember Mary Tess when she was dating this tall, gangly guy.
Oh, no.
I was like, ooh, who's this guy? At a Christmas party, she's like, she's blushing right now. And I was like, this is a weird match.
Yeah, that didn't last.
No.
That was not a good investment.
Yeah. So just being a young person, trying to figure out what it is to be, go from being a kid to an adult. I think we both were doing that at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah.
I was like, Michael, what are you doing? You're like, I don't know. What are you doing?
Yeah, it's just
blind leading the blind.
It was a little blind leading the blind, but it was really nice to kind of have some companionship and some
camaraderie,
when you first get, just to get started. I remember us going to LA Grill. Do you remember that place?
Yeah.
On Blundell and 2.
Yeah. The food was cheap.
Oh, yeah. Souvlaki was, I think, $5 or $6.
Yeah,
$5.99. Yeah. And I could eat half and pack the other half. So that was back in the day, it feels like yesterday, but it was so long ago.
It was a long, long time ago.
Yeah. Isn't it weird when you see your anniversary date of how long you've been doing it?
You have to get
relicensed again.
Yes.
So it's been, 15 years for, it's been almost 15 years.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm going to my 14th year.
Wow.
It's just wild, I can't even, I see, because I get to work with a lot of new agents and
mm-hmm.
people getting started, and it's just and they're just getting started in their journey, and they're so excited. I was like, I wonder, I probably was exactly,
that
we probably
year.
Were just like that, right?
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah.
I would drive for, 2 hours to go for a potential buyer's appointment.
Right.
Now I'm like, oh, it's kind of far. Are they serious?
Yeah.
We just had different energy back then.
Yeah. So, but, obviously as you've kind of been practicing, you've kept note of some of the what brings you business and stuff like that, and you're a relationship focused realtor, right? Can you explain a little bit about that and how that kind of works?
I don't really have a proven technique to it. All the real estate courses and coaches I've had over the years, they always talk about the power of repeat and referral business, but it takes a while to do it. I feel like I did it the slow way, one person at a time,
right?
But I really focused on doing an exceptional job for that one person, so that they are not just, when I ask for a referral, they're like, okay, well, they're like dying to refer me to their friends and family. They're like, you have to use Veritas. She went above and beyond, she was there for us, creating clients that are that enthusiastic, but that requires a lot of work and one-on-one energy. And so I did that a lot in the beginning, especially to just try to get a few clients under my belt, and then it naturally continues from there.
Yeah. So was it just a hard to serve, just that's the reason why, or did you have some intention to build, do you have a way that you kind of get the referral business to come back?
Yeah, well, in the initial meetings, I do have a page in my presentation where it explains my business that says, most realtors spend a large majority of their time prospecting, hosting open houses, door knocking, cold calling, but I don't want to do any of that. Now I'm in my script right now.
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah.
But all I ask is that if I do an exceptional job, that you refer me to your friends and family.
Oh,
and then
I make
them make a verbal commitment right away.
Mm-hmm.
And then it also sets the standard for myself to remember, hey, I have to knock these people's socks off. I don't want to just phone it in and do a half-assed job.
Yeah.
And so it starts with that. And then I follow up anytime I get a referral, even if it's just my friend wants to buy, I send them a little gift card in the mail right away.
Oh, good.
And
good.
Then if
on
they
the
close,
behavior.
Then I send them another.
Oh, wow. Okay, so you do it on the behavior of the referral and on the close.
Correction. Yeah, that's
yeah.
correct. Sorry.
What do you, so like, So if you don't mind, so like the gift card is just
like
$10, $10 or whatever, And then,
and then when they close and I buy them a dinner or something.
Oh, wow, that's
something,
nice.
I try to keep the gifts pretty personalized. I don't have, like, a stack of cards. I think about each individual person.
Yeah.
Sometimes I ask their friends, too, what they would like as a referral.
Mm-hmm.
So then their friends know, oh, they're getting a referral.
Oh,
you
I
know?
See. That's good.
So I'd call their friend and say, hey, you know, what's their favorite place to eat or what's her favorite place to shop? And then at least both of them see that they get a reward for
mm-hmm.
their referral.
So obviously you've talked about, you know, providing a great customer experience, great
mm-hmm.
consumer experience. Do you have a certain process that you use? Let's say you were to list my house and
yeah.
you're like on a listing
appointment
right now.
Yeah, okay, here we go. Yeah. Well, yeah, I do have obviously a presentation I go through and I try to cater it to who the person is.
Okay.
So if they're a stats person, teacher, engineer, something like that, I'll go through more of the details of the presentation. If I've got a CEO client who, let's say, he owns a financial company, I'm going to skip through a lot of the presentation, but still show them that I prepared something,
right.
but maybe just get to like a couple key pages.
Right.
And so I cater my presentation to who the client is.
So how do you do research on the client before you go?
A lot of the times I know who they are already
right.
because it's a referral or
mm-hmm.
I ask the person. You know, you're going to meet with my mom. I'm like, okay, well, what's your mom like? And they're like, oh, she's great. You know, people like usually tell you. But sometimes you kind of walk in blind and you have to be perceptive and pick up questions. You know, you ask the tour of the house right away and as they're talking, they'll tell you about themselves. And so you try to pick up who they are in the first few minutes if you can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, Before I meet someone, I normally go into like a deep dive, like, you know, internet research study of like
put on your sunglasses,
yeah.
Facebook.
Yeah, I go.
It's a little bit creepy if you're like, oh, how was your steak on Saturday? They're like, what the?
You know, it's funny because I think the more you prepare,
mm-hmm.
so I don't know what your process before you go and meet a client, but mine is I really spend as much time as I can to like research that individual,
mm-hmm.
like what was their previous job, if they have a LinkedIn or they have Facebook or the Instagram will stalk them.
Yes, same.
And then I'll try to find some commonalities,
mm-hmm.
you know, try to be really genuine. But if I see that they're really active in sports, I'll be like, well,
You show up with your headband on and your sweatbands.
Exactly. I played a sport once. So,
I played tennis Wii
yeah,
before.
Yeah, exactly. So I would try to get to, you know, try to find some common ground. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think I learned a lot from, it was funny, Mary Tess and I shared a client. And I used to be like all business. Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, before when I first got started, like nobody wants to talk to an agent about how their day was or what they want to get down is to business. So my assumption is I would go to meet a client. First thing I would do is I just dig right into stats, go right at it. And then they were just like, whoa.
Take it easy.
Yeah, take it easy there, bucko. But then it was funny. We shared a client. And I saw how much you didn't talk about anything except for just their family.
Yeah.
And like, he was I think it was Ross and Janet, and
oh,
like
okay.
yeah, and how like you know the family and their work and all these other things, and we barely talked about any of the real estate, and then you know at the end they're signing things and stuff like that. But yeah, it's just it's kind of a cool way of doing things.
It's a little bit different, but it's more genuine and more enjoyable for me that
way,
right? Because I actually care about the people. I want to know what their story is. And usually when people are moving, it's not because they're doing it for kicks.
Right.
There's usually some sort of story involved.
Yeah.
And so I like to find out that. And then it also establishes trust
mm-hmm.
and builds rapport and kind of sets it up like, hey, we're going to be a team. We're going to go through this together.
Mm-hmm.
And then the real estate stuff is kind of easy.
Yeah.
I don't know. For me, it is. Like talking about stats, that stuff is, you can listen to a million podcasts and learn how to do that.
Right.
Right. But it's getting to know people and really journeying with people. That's the enjoyable, meaningful part of the job.
I think so for sure. Like the you know, seeing that transformation in like, you know, someone's, not only their home, but in their life. Like, what's a story that, do you have like one of your favorite stories of a client? You don't have to name the names.
Yeah, of course. I've had lots of different conversations with clients who are going through all sorts of difficult situations. I've had some sad ones before where I've gone into the meeting and you can tell their relationship is broken.
Mm-hmm.
And the husband won't even come into the room and talk to me. And the wife just sat there basically and cried and poured her heart out.
Yeah.
I didn't get the listing. They didn't list it. But I felt like at that point in time, I was just there for her.
Right.
To comfort her in that season. And I don't know if they ever ended up moving. I don't think they did. So I've had some difficult situations like that. But if I ever have the opportunity to pray with people too, I will take that. Mm. If they're open to it. Because I think that's a huge part of why I do what I do.
How is that? How do you, do you just, so just, you know, you just have a, like, inspiration to do that before you do it? Or you
okay,
just...
so before every meeting I go to,
right.
I sit in my car like a crazy person and close my eyes. So mm-hmm. I hope they don't look at me at
yeah.
the window. They're like, what is she doing? I'm a little nap.
Yeah.
No, I close my eyes, I pray, and I ask for God to give me an opportunity to speak of Him.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's not an opportunity, that I would at least represent Him well.
Oh.
And it's very consistent. It's the same prayer. The Lord's like, here we go again. Like, you know, He's heard
mm-hmm.
it a million times.
Yeah.
And so when I walk in, I'm prepared and hoping for that opportunity.
A lot of people have fear to share their, you know, religious beliefs or their spirit in
yes,
work. You know, they try to have this, like, dichotomous life. Like,
that's tiring.
Have you felt that pressure before? Have you felt that in the past?
Yeah, there's some people who are, they're just not open for the conversation.
Right.
And I kind of drop little breadcrumbs. I might mention church, or I might mention, you know, I pray or something, and you can tell if somebody's like, oh, that's interesting, then, you know, we continue that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But if they've had a bad church experience, then, you know, my prayer is just that I represent God well to
yeah.
them, and that's it. And maybe
mm-hmm.
they're not ready to have the conversation. Maybe they are ready, but maybe 5 years from now.
Yeah.
You know, you never know.
I think it's nice when you know, when you're reading their body language, you're reading how they're receiving things. Like, I've had a couple, and I think everyone has had a crazy Christian experience where someone's just like all on top
yes.
of them about
yeah.
like they have to believe
yeah.
this,
to
like, exactly. Like, and if you don't, you're going to hell. Like,
yeah,
you know,
burn.
Yeah. And so I think, you know, that can be super off-putting, but I think.
Right.
If you're reading a situation, you're being tasteful and you
right.
are, and it's a big part of your life, hey, why not share it
yes.
with others, right? And,
yeah.
and you know, and if they're not receptive to it, yeah, just obviously setting a great example, right?
Totally.
Is
like God, like the scripture says, God says, love God first, love people second. Like, that's the whole basis
right.
of my faith. And so to love people doesn't necessarily always mean shoving the gospel down their throat,
mm-hmm.
but it does mean caring for them, listening for them, yeah, and then if they do ask about my faith, I've had people be like, you're kind of different. I'm like, okay. They're like, you're very honest. I'm like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, is that because of church? I'm like, you know, so then it opens up conversations. But yeah, a lot of time in real estate, people are hurting. And people in general, not just in real estate, are hurting. They're carrying around pain. They're carrying around broken relationships, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
And so I think... That real estate is sort of an avenue for me to engage in conversation with people
yeah.
about those things.
Have you always been able to get, like, you know, pretty deep with people?
Yeah.
Yeah, you have you have that, like, aura.
Michael's doing this, like, arms,
yeah.
thing. I was like, my aura.
Yeah.
I think I care for people. I think if someone's been given to me as a client, it's a blessing, it's a gift from God,
mm-hmm.
and I try to treat them as such.
Yeah. So, you know, like we talked a little bit about the, you know, the fear some people have in like kind of, you know, introducing some spiritual things to their practice or to their business practice, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I think, you know, it's a tough bridge to cross for some people. And I think, you know, what do you think the block is there? I think it's judgment.
Well, everyone's afraid
of
upsetting somebody else or offending somebody.
Right.
So I'm not offensive in nature. And so usually people aren't really offended by somebody who cares for them and listens to them and is loving towards them.
Yeah.
That's usually not
totally.
Offensive, right?
Yeah.
And it's a huge part of who I am. So it's very natural. If for me to not bring up my faith is kind of unnatural, to be honest. It's
yeah.
kind of like I'm hiding this during the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But that's because my faith is a huge part of who I am. It's the foundation. It's the pie crust, you know?
Right. Yeah, I had one of the clients that I was working with, one of the friends that I'm working with, and they, you know, he's Muslim, and basically he was saying, I gotta go. Like, we're in the middle of a meeting. He's like, I gotta go to mosque. And then he just left. And, you know, and I was like, and I actually had tons of respect for him. I'm like, wow.
Very
devoted. Obviously made commitments, and this made me want to almost even work more closely with him because he was so, he was devoted to, what he was doing. And so that was kind of, I thought that was really good where, you know, it's not like forcibly putting beliefs on people, but just kind of being yourself and kind of going from there. So, you know, and you also have a family.
Yes.
Yeah. You got two young kids, right?
I've got two little boys. They're 2 and 3 years old. So if you follow me on Instagram, you'll see all the shenanigans that they get up to.
Yeah. It's funny that a couple things, like, you know, you became more successful in your business after you had kids, like a lot more successful in your business.
Successful.
So like what's going on? Like normally people think it's the opposite. Like, you're like, oh, I have kids. Business is over.
Yeah, my life is over.
Yeah.
No, my children have helped me become way more efficient and passionate about my job. My oldest son, he's 3 years old. When I leave for work, he always tells me, okay, mommy, be safe. Don't get a ticket from the police. And then he says, thank you for going to make money. And then he always ends with, enjoy. Like, he does this, like, little singing thing.
Right.
And so I was thinking about that. Like, those three things that he says to me have actually helped my career. So don't get a ticket. I think of that as, you know, be good, behave, be wise, be safe.
Yep.
And then when he's like, you know, thank you for going to make money, I'm like, right, I'm going to make money. I'm not going to just spend my day frivolously.
Right.
So I'm very intentional in trying to produce results in what I do and be efficient at my work. Because if I waste time, that's time that I'm not spending with my kids.
Mm-hmm.
So he's helped me in that way. And then enjoy. He always says, enjoy. So have fun when I'm working, right? So he's taught me lots of life lessons.
Wow. Isn't that like thrilling to see, like, you know, like this little thing that's like teaching you?
Yeah.
You're supposed to teach him.
I know. Very humbling.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of people have that misconception, you know, when they first, you know, when they have a family, they're like, okay, well, you know, work stops. And, you know, you've actually accelerated your business, accelerated your career. The last 2 years, you've been a Medallion member, which is the top 10%. So, Meritess moved from the Greater Vancouver Board to the Fraser Valley Board. And, you know, she's a Medallion member, right? So, obviously really successful. And this is when you, like, right in the heat of you having a couple kids.
Yes.
So, like, so what are some of those, like, what were some of the efficiencies and the things that you did differently?
Yeah, the best years of my career have been since having my two kids.
Mm-hmm.
So they're 2 and 3. So the last 3 years have been fantastic for real estate for me. You know, there's all these different courses you could take. Like, I did this time balance workshop that I put on for my clients.
Okay.
I had my sister come and speak at it. She's from the Cayman Islands, and she's high in the financial sector.
Right.
And so she talks about doing 15-minute time blocking and just being aware of where you spend your time. And so if I'm going to spend 5 15-minute blocks on Netflix, that's fine.
Yeah.
But now I see I'm spending 5 15-minute blocks on Netflix.
Right.
And so with my kids, I really want to spend time with them. That's how kids, you know, measure love. If I just say, oh, I love you, it doesn't mean anything.
Right.
And so I need to make sure that I'm available to them. And so they've made me more efficient at working with clients. So when I was younger and just eager to show, I'd show anybody who's like, I want to see this house. I'm like, I'll take you to see 10.
Yeah.
You know? But now I make the clients jump through the hoops, make sure they're pre-qualified. I haven't checked my stats lately, but on average, they were looking at less than 6 properties before writing an offer on one.
To really get down to exactly what they want.
What they want.
Kind of,
and I work with clients that are
scattershotting.
Yes, that are very serious and really ready to buy.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're not, then I put them on a system until they are ready to buy.
So how do you qualify them? Like,
So usually I make them jump through the hoops of getting pre-approved first, obviously, if there's any sort of resistance to that. Because it's going to be a lot of work. And it's not just to, you know, oh, I stopped into my bank. I'm like, no, you got to provide documents. And they have to go to their accountant. So it's a lot of work. So if they're willing to invest that kind of time and energy, then I know at least there's a certain amount of motivation there.
Yeah. Do you always get them qualified with your mortgage person?
If at all possible, yes. Yeah, so I have a handful of excellent brokers. I've worked with dozens over the years, and so I try to work with the best of the best and then recommend them. Some people have their own guys, and that's fine, but then I ask to talk to those guys.
Yeah, so do I. So in our, whenever we meet with a buyer, we do one of two things. One is they're getting, most of them get, 98% of them get pre-approved with our vendor that we choose. Because we just want, even if it's the second option, because we just want to provide like a rock solid approval for them prior to us going out to search,
mm-hmm.
or we get the or we get the phone number of their family friend who they're using as their mortgage person, and we make sure that we have those parameters really set. But is there some is there any kind of formula that you use? So let's say, for example, they, like you mentioned that a few of them, you, if they're not really ready, is it only a pre-qualification, or is there anything else that you...
So then I put them on an auto search.
Right.
For the realtors out there using Collab Center, you can see how often they're checking in.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're actually categorizing the listings, then, at least they're tracking that.
Yeah.
So I might put them on that for a while. And I go through a questionnaire with them and make sure, is there any... The last question is always is there anything that has to happen before you're ready to buy? If I found you a perfect house today, are you ready to go today? And that's where you're kind of trying to flush out if they're like, well, my dad has to come to... Oh, my accountant... Then you want to kind of deal with all those up front.
Yeah, up front. That's really healthy. So what do you... Because there's this ongoing debate in our office about Collab Center and doing the... Sending automatic notifications to... clients or doing it in a more curated way. What do you think?
Well, we've been in such a strong seller's market for the last few years,
so
there hasn't been a ton of listings for them to sift through to begin with. So I always start the client on Collab Center.
Right.
But then when we're in the thick of actually getting ready to purchase, there's usually only... I just tell the client, if you see the listing come up, you like it, text me right away.
Yeah.
And then we go see it and we buy it. Right. So this last year, I bet you most of my clients have only probably looked at one or two properties with me.
Wow.
Because they've already seen a whole bunch online. I send them with my business cards to open houses.
Yeah.
And then by the time they call me to see something, it's because they've already seen a bunch and they're ready to go.
They're ready to make a decision. Yeah, that's a good way. It's so funny because it kind of... Maybe I'm a control freak, but for us, no Collab Center. They get all their information from me or the team.
Directly.
So either we send a weekly email out for the most part, and then basically we call them after and review it.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the weekend, if we send them to opens, we call them and say, "What'd you think? Let's chat about it."
Yeah, I do that too.
Yeah, so that's kind of the process. But I know some agents that do super well with Collab Center as well, or an auto notification where the clients are getting all the information, and we've put a few clients on them, but it's just this, what is better? Yeah,
I'm better.
Mary Jess is better, it's clearly. And you were just you had an assistant for a while, but right now you're on your own, right?
I still have her.
Okay.
Yeah, she's part-time for me.
Part-time.
She just got her real estate license as
right.
well.
And she's not, this is kind of interesting.
Remote.
Yeah, she's remote. So can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, so she currently lives up in 100 Mile right now.
Yeah.
She's planning on moving back, which will be great. But I'm a bit of a control freak in that way too. I do a lot of my own work. But anything admin-y kind of goes up to her.
Mm-hmm.
And I just forward her the emails. We use a system called Trello with checklists.
Right.
So for every client, they have a whole checklist and she goes through that and makes sure, that they've, we've done their FinTrack or we've filled out certain forms or whatever. So then we can see what's left to do.
Right.
So she helps me. It's surprising. An unlicensed assistant can do a lot of our career. Kind of what we're paid to do as a realtor is not a whole lot that they can't do. So I feel like maybe, let's say, I don't know what the number is, let's say 70% of the work an admin person could do. But the 30% of the negotiations, the problem solving, that's the stuff that we're actually paid for in real dollars.
That's and that must mean a big step for you to save, to have more time for your family and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Right?
So the definitely having kids is giving me, I'd like to say courage, but it's more like I have no choice.
Right.
Because I can't do it all. If I were to do my own paperwork, clean my own house and take care of my kids, I'd look much older. I have more wrinkles.
So when did you So when did you make that decision to get an assistant? Like, what was it, a dollar amount that you hit? Was it or just a time thing?
It was more of just a time thing,
right,
and being frustrated with doing work at 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
But I think having a husband and kids really made me shift my priorities.
Yeah.
Because in a certain way, there's a certain amount of pride that you can take. Look at me, I'm leaving the office at 11 o'clock, or
right,
I'm starting my day at 5 a.m. But it's like a lot of times that I was doing that, it's because I was filling out documents. You know, it's not like I'm cold calling at 11 o'clock at night.
Right.
So, yeah, having the kids has forced me to really look at my schedule a lot more.
Yeah. I think when you, when you first get started, you need to do everything.
Oh, yeah.
Because you need to learn every aspect,
yes,
of the business.
100%.
So, like, I think you need to learn how to, like, fold flyers by hand even, because you need to know what, like, you know, what someone in an administrative role might be going through, so you can empathize with them and stuff like that. But I think I remember when we first got started, I'd be at the office until, like, midnight every day.
All night.
Yeah. And I would be like there first thing in the morning, and I could have slept there, and like, you know, just doing all that stuff. But you know, basically after my first year, I was so run down.
It's tiring.
Yeah, like,
yeah, this industry can burn you out. It's got a very high divorce rate.
Yeah, totally.
You know,
why do you think that is? Is it just because of busyness, or?
I think of busyness, and there's not a lot of accountability. You're out on the road on your own all the time.
Right.
If you want to work 24/7, you can. There's nothing stopping you.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, people are driven by all sorts of reasons to just, you know, bigger, faster, stronger. Right.
Right. Yeah, totally. I've been, like, kind of wrestling with that idea of, like, you know, growth and, like, why? You know, why are we doing all this stuff? You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, trying to be really... you know, be really conscious of like how spending my time and energy and you know, what I'm actually spending my time and energy doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've been on a little bit of a kick lately, so I'm going to get off my soapbox soon, but I'm still on it right now.
Okay.
Like, just about this whole idea of like technology, right? And how much time I've been spending on my phone.
Yes.
And it has led to so many different things. Like, I lost my driver's license. I like had like, you know, and I was looking at my screen time. I'm like spending more than almost two full days out of my week on my phone. Like, I was spending, you know, 40 some odd hours, 42 hours a week on my phone. 48 hours is two full days. It doesn't include sleep. And I was like, I am just like, what am I doing with my whole life?
Well, you can justify it, especially in real estate.
Yeah, but then when you, like, it's funny because when you see, like, because in the screen time, you can actually see what you're spending your time doing.
Okay.
You can see that you're just wasting your time. Like, productivity stuff, like emails and stuff like that is, like, literally, like, the small bar. And then there's, like, social media, YouTube. And I'm like, oh, my God. Really? Yeah, it's just so bad. And, like, and it was just, like, shooting at me every week. And I was just, like, I was always, like, shameful about it. I was, like, hiding it.
Right.
And then now I'm just, like, you know what? I have a problem, and I'm admitting my problem, and I need to make some changes, because if I don't, it's going to consume me.
Well, my three-year-old will say, Mommy, look at my eyes.
Oh.
Because I say that to him sometimes. And then he knows if I'm looking at my phone, I'm not really listening to him.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, whoa, this kid is...
He's wise. Leo's wise.
Very wise.
Yeah, Leo the wise. But yeah, it's just like, you know, and thinking about how you're spending your time and like what is actually important. And, you know, so... It's funny, like, genuine human connections not only lead to, like, a more satisfaction in your life, but actually I think it's, for as an agent, it's really good for your pocketbook. Like, when you get in front of people, you're connecting with them, you're really present with them.
Yes.
Wow, like, you get to see some pretty amazing results, right?
Yeah, I really got into the community at Abbotsford.
Yep.
And I feel like that helped my career a lot.
Oh, yeah.
That wasn't my intention behind it. But we hosted a community group at our home every other week. About 30 people would come for a potluck. We were in small groups with different people and really just in each other's lives, helping each other. And it was so enriching, you know, for quality of life.
Yeah.
But referrals came out of those too.
Oh yeah, for sure. Because you're connecting with people. And
I never talked about real estate. I never, you know, I wasn't like, hey, refer. It was super genuine, and that's a difference.
Yeah, I think, you know, people get really attached to the technical aspects of the business, but it is a people business. Like,
ultimately,
without a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah.
This
contact
is like,
sport.
Yeah, exactly. It's a contact sport. It's like, this is like a total people business. And if you're in front of a lot of people and you're positive, you're optimistic, you have a good, you know, you have a good demeanor and you're hot.
Well, that's why we're so successful.
Clearly.
That's why we're doing podcasts.
Exactly. So I'm hiding behind this microphone. But yeah, it's just like a, yeah, so, you know, that's like a, that's a big aspect of it. And you can be as technical as you want, but if you're not good in front of people, if you're not, like,
right,
you don't have that emotional intelligence, man, it's going to be, it's a little bit of a tough slog.
Well, at the end of the day, you know, at my funeral, they're not going to be like, hey, Mary Tessel, you know, $15 million in real estate, and she had a huge database. They're going to say, like, she really helped me with this, or she was, like, you know, those, like, have you ever done that exercise where you write out your eulogy?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've done that before. And that just helps define kind of why we're doing what we're doing.
Yeah, and it was really weird, like, there's a bit of a personal tangent, but at my dad's funeral, one of his business associates talked, like, you know, was doing the eulogy about all these big deals he did, like $50 million deal, $20 million, like all these like crazy deals that they were working on. And at the time, when I was a young, immature man, I was, like, so impressed. But now, looking back at it, it's actually kind of sad.
Right.
You know, that, you know, I wish he would be remembered more for his, like, great friendships and his, like, great
character
and his, like, you know, when he taught somebody and how it kind of moved them in a better direction for their life, you know, or, you know, created, like, I was alone and companionship and, you know, that type of thing. And it was kind of, which was, you know, other people talked about that stuff at my dad's funeral, but, like, you know, but that kind of stood out for me, you know, and, you know, I just, so you got to kind of, you know, without being too morbid, you got to almost think about that.
Oh,
you know, like, what do you want to be remembered for?
Yeah.
Right. And it's going to be those people that you can, that you connect with, you know, that you're going to, see the, you know, that'll have the most currency at the end.
Right.
You know? Yeah. So it's kind of,
yeah,
but it's funny how it all, it, in this business, it does really, it is congruent. Like, if you're really good with people, you will do well. Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, in terms of, you know, I've seen Mary Tess grow because, you know, when I met her for the first time, I think you were 21.
Yeah.
And, you know, here we are, you're 24 now? No.
Yeah. 34.
Yeah. So, like, you know, we went through kind of our young adult life together and working alongside of each other in brokerage. And we've been friends ever since do you remember the first time we met? I can't remember. Was it a Christmas party or something?
I don't remember.
I think it was at the office for sure.
I remember you drove a really crappy minivan. And I was driving my mom's fancy car.
And did you look down on me?
Yes, and now I'm driving the minivan. And you're driving the fancy car.
I saw the van.
Yeah.
That's what you get.
Exactly.
But so we were... You know, I was driving an old van when I first got started, and Mary Tess was faking it in her mom's car. And
pretending.
Yeah, and I remember you had a really weird, because Mary Tess is, it's a weird name.
It is.
Yeah, it's like, you're the only Mary Tess I've ever met.
Yeah. In the Philippines, it's super common. It's like Jennifer.
Yeah.
But here, everyone's like, Maritis? It's not like a disease. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought your name was like Mary, like your name was Mary, and then like Tess was your like last name or something like that. Because you're full Filipino, right?
I am.
Yeah, but you kind of look like a mix. Has anyone ever told you that?
Yeah, I get that all the time.
Yeah.
People are like, are you part Chinese? Are you part white?
Yeah.
Like, but it was great when I was reacting because I played everything from Chinese to Peruvian.
Yeah.
I played Spanish. I don't know.
Yeah, a bit of a mutt.
Yeah,
it's funny though, like, because you don't, because I have you been to the Philippines?
Yeah, a couple times.
Yeah? What'd you think?
I loved it.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, we have lots of family there, so we were in Quezon City. We did Boracay,
mm-hmm.
you know, the white sandy beaches
Yeah. You know, because, you know, my family's from the Philippines as well. We're Filipino-Chinese, but we, like, the people in the Philippines are, like, the nicest, most, like, friendliest, like, coolest people, like, ever.
Super hospitable, so much fun, everything's a party, they're constantly feeding you.
Right, and they're just smiling, all, like,
everyone's
everything's,
happy.
Like, yeah, everyone's happy. I don't know, is it just being on, like, a tropical island, or is it, like, I don't know, there's,
the
like, this
slogan, right? It's more fun in the Philippines.
Yeah, is that the slogan?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah, I like that slogan, and I feel like that energy is like, it's like very infectious.
Oh yeah.
You know, like, and it's weird because you weren't born there.
No.
And you went there later in life, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. When
I
did
was
you?
In 2012.
Oh, okay.
I
so
went
yeah.
when I was like 8 years old too.
Okay.
And it's funny because I picked up some Tagalog pretty quickly while I was
there, yeah?
even though I'm not fluent in it.
Right.
Now. But yeah, in 2012 we went, and that was a lot of fun.
Yeah. So it's, yeah, so like, I don't know, I just, I feel this like kinship.
He's like my Kuya Michael.
Exactly. yeah, so, you know, obviously we're, you know, so working out in Langley and in the Fraser Valley and kind of moving into that, like, did you do a lot of research in the demographic or did you just?
Well, I went to church the first day and I looked around and I realized I was the only Asian person.
Yeah.
There. There's like 800 people. I'm like, something sticks out. One
right.
of these things is not like the other and it's me.
Yeah.
So that was very different. And I honestly had a lot of insecurity about that.
Did you?
I did.
Why?
I was like, why would they, you know, I look different. I grew up in Richmond. I don't, you know, they're all, everyone's like cousins of somebody and they all
yeah.
know each other. But my manager broker told me at the time that, you know, if you bring value, then age and ethnicity have nothing to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
So just be a really, really good realtor and then it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. So that kind of helped me overcome my fear.
Well, they always say like, you know, everyone kind of knows a realtor and then you make this assumption that I shouldn't talk to anyone because everyone already knows a realtor.
Yeah.
Like, but that's totally not true. Right. And
it's not,
you know, there are some cases where I would hire like, you know, one type of person. There's other cases where I hire another type of person,
right?
And in many cases, you want someone that is totally unbiased. Like you talked about that story with the divorced couple. Sometimes they want someone that none of them even know. Like I've had that, I don't know why, maybe because I look like a responsible Chinese guy. But like I've had so many cases with divorce and like people passing away and stuff like that. They just need this kind of this like,
yeah,
robotic Chinese guy.
People do that too. They've hired me. They're like, I went on the website, saw your picture, and I called you. I was like, okay. Like women, not like men that are like, oh, I've had those too.
Oh, yeah?
That's
sure.
how I made my career. No, I'm just kidding.
Has anyone ever called you because you were like they thought you were good looking?
Oh, yes. I've
oh, really? Okay.
Interesting,
do tell.
Feet people call.
Are you serious?
I am dead serious.
What the?
Yeah.
I have to look.
You know, you get all sorts of weirdos. Cause
I have a feet cam.
I used to do like traditional advertising. So I, you know, have my picture out there and I hired like, you know, photographers, like the best of the best and everything's airbrushed and, you know, I was 21 and, putting myself out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so then, were the creepy calls?
Oh, yeah.
Like
I got quite a few. Yeah. That doesn't really happen as much anymore. I don't know. I wonder why.
They must be, wonder. Yeah. It was, there was a couple of the agents in our office when we first got started. Actually, I won't name names, but, they got some of those creepy calls. And I you know, because I had sisters growing up and, you know, I just put it out there. Said, hey, if you're feeling uncomfortable at a meeting, you just want a bodyguard to go with you, I'll just literally go with you. Even if I don't go in, I'll just wait outside and I'll read or do something. So I did that for a few of the agents at the office.
That's
I don't know if I, I don't, I don't know if I did, but I did it for a few of the agents that we had, you know, just because I think I was just always at the office. So.
Yeah, I've brought people before with me if I'm meeting someone I don't know.
Yeah.
Definitely, there's different safety.
You mentioned Tyson's come with
Don. Yeah, he's come with me a whole bunch of times.
Yeah.
Even if there are people I do know.
Tyson
is my husband.
Mary Tyson's husband. Yeah.
Yeah, but sometimes he comes with me anyways just so we can spend some time together in the car.
Yeah.
Like driving together or listening
to
a
podcast. Good husband.
He's very, very good. Yeah, I love that.
I have, maybe Pri's going to listen to this, but I don't care. I've asked her to do that many times. Like, hey, I'm going to Port Moody.
Yeah.
You want to go for a ride? And, you know, I got to do this thing. It'll take half an hour. I can drop you off at a coffee shop. You can read. You can do anything you want. And we can have a drive.
Yeah.
She's like, no. I think she loves home. She just loves the home.
I'm a homebody, too.
Yeah, are you?
Yeah, I actually... If I'm not working, I'm a home.
Have you done a personality test before? Have you?
Yeah, I've done, you know, those Enneagrams or whatever.
Yeah, so
yeah.
Are you an extrovert or an introvert?
I'm right at the 51% extrovert, so it just depends. I do like being with people. I really like my husband, so I like to spend time with him.
Yeah,
and
cool
I like
guy.
Having a chauffeur, so
yeah.
It's a good thing.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah. That's
so
nice.
He chauffeurs me around sometimes.
You know, it's so nice, and, you know, I think... you know, before we wrap up, it's been an hour, if you can believe it. Yeah. Before we wrap up, I'd love to hear just, let's say for, if you're an agent that, you know, obviously started a family or is going to start a family and they're they have some time constraints, like what are some advice you'd give or someone that maybe is transitioning to another market? Like what advice would you give?
Ooh, I would hire out as much as you can. I know that's not, always doable right away, but I would definitely make that a priority, whether that's like as a woman, like housework and taking care of my house. That's something I have to hire out because otherwise I'll just be too tired. I don't have any mental energy left.
Right.
And then just being very genuine about who you are. It's a bit of a longer game. I mean, I know there's lots of realtors. I'll give you, you know, hit this many doors, help make this many calls, write down, you know, your entire database. Like all those things are good and you should do all those things. But I think what's really going to set you apart is being who God created you to be to those people and not trying to be, you know, Mary Chess the realtor and I put on one hat and then I go home, I'm Mary Chess the mom. It's like, I'm trying to be the same person all the time because A, it's less exhausting and B, it's way more fulfilling.
Yeah.
And then I actually enjoy what I do. So then I don't have this desire like, oh, I can't wait till I retire at 50 and I don't have to do this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I don't have this desire for, you know, just going to create passive income so that I can be done with this job as if I hate my job, you know? I'm like, no, I love what I do because I'm being me through doing this job.
And you get to discover more of yourself as you kind of journey with others, right?
Oh, yeah. I learn all sorts of stuff about myself and areas of weakness. And this career will naturally push you. You'll have no choice but to go beyond yourself.
That's crazy. You know, if I was to tell the 20-year-old Mary Tess what I know. What would I tell Mary Tess that she was 20 and just getting cracking? Because Mary Tess, she is like a very, she has a very she's a glowing personality. She's very like she has, if we're at a party, I think people are just naturally, I don't know why. Do you feel that about yourself?
Perfume.
You feel that about yourself? And like I'd be like, you know what, like just like love people and care about people and just focus on them and less on yourself.
Yes.
And you'll see the big enormous results. And I think that's probably what happened.
I know people are always like, what's your secret, what do you do? And I have lots of different younger realtors that are like, can you mentor me? I was like, oh, I could, but I don't really know what to teach you, you know, like there's all the different programs you can sign up for. But it's really just being authentic to who you are, and people will be drawn to that.
Yeah. Well, I think on that note, Mary Tess, thank you so much for being on the pod.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And until next time, I just, thank you guys so much for listening. If you like this podcast, please rate it 5 out of 5 on whatever you're listening to, on Spotify or iTunes or whatever you're listening to, and hopefully leave us a comment. And Mary Tess, if so, it's funny. We actually have quite a number of reviews and comments. Something like that. It's kind of cool. And I get after each of the pods, like I'll get a few text messages about, like, what are you looking at?
There's a spider on the mic, sorry.
Oh, which one?
No, right, like, 3 inches from my face.
Oh!
Right here.
Scary.
Sorry.
Okay, so Charlotte's Web is here. And so, yeah, on that note, Mary Tess, thank you so much for being part of the pod.
Thank you.
Okay, we're done.